There was nothing to see.
Come on, let the kids sleep. Rest of you out, and start clearing that mess.
Oh, colder than a witch's hoo-ha out there.
Ryan was glad they'd all equipped themselves with warm coats. The gale was like a whetted knife, making his eyes water, the ice particles it carried ripping at the tender flesh of his cheeks. He huddled into the collar of his trusty suede coat, happy to have a moment to admire Christie's looks. Her fiery hair whisked about her shoulders as she stood tall in her knee-length black fur, its hue so dark it seemed almost blue in the strengthening light. There was a dusting of snow on the road, and it swirled around his boots. The truck stood tall, its crimson flank streaked with mud. The long exhaust had retained its original chrome, and now reflected the pink glow of the distant sun. Ryan looked at the hubcaps and saw the stunted, distorted image of himself and the others. Then the memory of the flicker of movement in the scrub gave him pause.
JB, watch your backs.
You smell muties, Ryan?
No. Thought I saw something out there.
Huh.
The armorer nodded. It was even colder here than it had been up in the far north, in the part of the land once known as Alaska. Here it was a bitter, dry cold, a chill so intense that Ryan felt the hairs beginning to freeze in his nostrils. His skin felt a size too small, and if he opened his mouth, it made the gaps in his teeth sing with the icy shock. Finnegan kept the engine of the Kenworth ticking over, occasionally gunning it when it began to falter. He knew, as they all did, that if the truck failed them here, their chances would be a whole lot less than good. The smoke from the exhaust hung blue in the morning until the wind snapped at it and dragged it back along the valley. The road was blocked for about 20 feet, and Ryan considered asking Finn to gun the engine and drive the rig slowly forward, hoping to move the tangled mess. That might be a whole lot easier than trying to move it by hand. If it didn't work, then it was a long walk back to Ginsburg Falls, and they certainly wouldn't get the red carpet treatment if they went back there.
Let's get her done.
It wasn't that hard. The wood was bone dry, snapping easily as they pulled and wrenched at it, clearing a path wide enough for the Kenworth. As they toiled, the snow grew thicker, blinding them, settling on their coats, covering the tangled branches, and making it difficult to see what they were doing. It took them about 15 minutes working together, the sweat steaming off them.
That'll do it, Finn.
Right.
Finn fought his way up through the box. The wheels began to turn slowly, and the rig eased forward, crunching the remains of the debris into the icy road.
Climb on, people.
Lori jumped up, pushed from behind by Doc Tanner, who used the opportunity to snatch a quick feel, his gloved hands sliding between the girl's thighs, before he climbed into the Kenworth himself.
Theophilus!
Go on, Christy.
JB walked along the side of the rig, eyes flicking to the dark shadows in the undergrowth at the edges of the blacktop. Christy scrambled up and was pulled into the cab by the pale hands of Jack Lauren, now fully awake, his white foxy face peering into the ghost-dancing snow. Ryan motioned for the armorer to go next, readying himself to swing up off the highway. With one hand on the pull bar, his body half on, half off the rig, Ryan called out to Finn.
Gun it!
He was looking directly into Christy's green eyes when he saw them open wide in shock and her mouth begin to form a warning.
What is...
The impact knocked him clean off the truck, and he hit the rutted snow with rib-creaking force. He left the G-12 caseless in the cab, his six-hour pistol holstered at his hip. But the long coat hampered him, tangling as he fell. His ears were filled with a ferocious snarling, his nostrils overwhelmed with the rank stench of the creature that had attacked him. For a few moments, Ryan couldn't even see what it was. He did know that it was large and coarse-haired, and that it had curved canine teeth that snapped at his throat. Part of his brain guessed it was a big timber wolf, but most of his attention was wonderfully concentrated on fighting off the murderous bastard. He managed to get a forearm across the beast's neck, keeping its clashing teeth a few inches from his face. Then it kicked, its sharp claws ripping at him, trying to spill his guts steaming into the snow. The Kenworth had gone, probably stopped some way down the slope, the others tumbling from it in a bid to rescue him. But the snow had thickened to a blizzard, dropping visibility to only a couple of yards. If he didn't save himself, the others would be too late.
Get off me, you fucker!
Ryan managed a clumsy punch. The creature backed off for a moment, where it crouched on its haunches, eyes glowing like living rubies. It was a wolf, one of the biggest Ryan Cotter had ever seen. There were burrs matted in its brindled coat, and bloody froth dripped from its reeking jaws. It stood close to 4 feet tall at the shoulder. Ryan reached for his blaster, but the torn strip of leather from his coat was still tangled about the butt of the gun. He dropped his hand to the cold hilt of the 18-inch Panga on the other hip and drew the blade in a whisper of steel.
Come on, then, shithead!
The world had shrunk to a shifting circle of whiteness, barely 2 paces across, containing Ryan and the Mutie Wolf. Ryan dropped instinctively into the classic knife fighter's crouch, the blade in his right hand pointed up, feet a bit apart, shuffling in at the wolf, keeping his balance, breathing lightly. The animal continued to snarl at him, belly down in the snow, inching closer. Ryan feinted a low cut at the wolf's muzzle. The thing held its place. The ice was slippery, and Ryan edged closer carefully, watching the monster's eyes. It was one of the things his dead brother had taught him when he was only a callow boy. The great timber wolf blinked at the human that dared to face it down. Then Ryan saw the signal, deep in the glowing crimson coals. Now. He sidestepped the baying charge, hacking at the creature's shoulder as it brushed past him. The blade of the Panga bit deep, and he felt the jar as it cracked into bone. Blood spray, steaming in the cold, patterning the snow around them. The wolf whirled about, snapping at its own wound. Ryan carefully freed the pistol from his coat. The animal was panting, blood flowing freely over its grizzled pelt and soaking the earth around its forepaws. Despite the crippling wound, the wolf wasn't finished yet. The P226 9mm blaster was in Ryan's right fist, its 25 and a half ounces of weight feeling as familiar to him as his own face in a mirror. The bullet hit precisely where Ryan had aimed it, between the kill-mad eyes. The body was knocked sideways, the legs kicking frantically. The mutie beast's claws scraped through the ice at the road gravel beneath.
Where are you, Ryan?
It was Christy, stumbling over the slippery ruts of ice, her Heckler & Koch pistol in her hand. Ryan saw her looming through the wraiths of wind-torn snow. She stopped when she saw the twitching corpse of the timber wolf.
By Gaia, that's a big bastard. You all right, lover? I just saw it come out of the shadows at you, but I couldn't be sure what it was.
The Kenworth had finally ground to a halt just around the next bend in the road, its exhaust vomiting smoke. To Ryan's educated hearing, it was obvious that the truck's engine was beginning to fail. It was a much rougher note than when they'd left the town, and he could actually catch the taste in the air of burning oil as the engine overheated. His guess was that they'd covered around 50 miles from Ginsburg Falls, moving slowly along the treacherous highway. They'd been told that the range of the Kenworth was only around 100 miles. If that was right, they'd soon have to consider returning and trying to get to the gateway through the town, or going on and risking being totally stranded in the desert of rocks and snow. Once they were all safely in the cluttered, cramped cab of the rig, they discussed what they should do.
There's a big fucking ridge ahead. Saw it before this fucking snow came down. It's only about 5-6 miles ahead. Sky seemed clearer north.
This wag won't run much longer. I doubt we'd make it back to the Ville.
Ryan nodded his agreement.
Could be best to go on, I guess.
Jack stared moodily out of one of the high side windows.
The trans message was this way. Came for that. Go on.
Christy shook her head.
If we stop now, then we should make the gateway. Try somewhere else. Farther we go on, the farther we've got to come back. Maybe on foot. It's a bleak land.
We blunder across the Deathlands like children. Lost in a maze, like the players of some celestial game where we know neither the object nor the rules.
What's your point, Doc?
The point, my dear and somewhat brutal Mr. Cawdor, is that we could have here a chance, rare as Vatican charity, to improve our tiny store of knowledge.
The message, you mean?
Indeed I do. I, for one, am set that we should continue across this darkling plain, blighted by the long-dead ignorant armies.
But we don't know where we're heading. Got no radios with us.
Ah, Mr. Dix, that is where you are wrong. Show the nice gentleman the pretty toy you found on the floor of this rumbling behemoth, dear child.
Lori smiled at him and reached inside her gray fur coat, pulling out a small black plastic box with a dial and several buttons.
Fucking ace, lady. Nice little radio trans. Where'd you find it, Lori?
Under the seat when I get in.
Got in.
Right, Theophilus. Got in.
It wake?
Sure does, son. You found that recorded message on the dial last time, dear Finnegan, did you not?
Yeah.
Can you do it on this?
Sure. Strength of the signal should tell us if we're heading in the right fucking direction. Someone else can drive this crumbling shit heap a spell.
JB took over.
The goddamn steering's coming loose.
Oh, fucking relax, Barrymore.
That's fucking funny.
Finn changed seats and took the little radio from the girl, peering at it in the light from the east of the valley.
I think it was...
Ryan had read in an old book from before the apocalypse that in the Golden Age it was possible to spin the dial on a radio trans and pick up hundreds of different stations, all broadcasting at once. Now, you are very lucky to pick up even a single station.
Maybe we've gone wrong.
Stay tuned to this frequency. North of Ginsburg Falls, where the old Highway 62 reaches the trail to Crater Lake. Go there and wait. You will be contacted.
Damn it, I think we got
it. Anyone receiving this message who requires any assistance in the matter of science or the study of past technical developments will be aided. Bring all your information and follow this signal or you'll be given help. Stay tuned to this frequency. North of...
How far?
JB was still wrestling with the steering of the ailing Kenworth, taking some time to answer.
Can't be more than a few miles, Jack. That signal's nearly on top of us, isn't it, Finn?
Guess so. Little fucking toy like this trans here can't have a range more than 5, maybe 10 miles tops.
Straight up ahead, up those hills?
Ryan rubbed at the windshield with his glove, trying to see out through the swirls of light snow. The armorer nodded.
If this bitchin' wagon make it that far...
His concern was well placed. About 8 miles farther along the old blacktop, just as the bright sun of late afternoon was breaking through, the engine gave out.
Damn it. Everybody out.
My God, this was such magnificent country once.
Doc stood hushed by the staggering natural beauty of the sight ahead of them. By Ryan's calculations, they'd walked around 3 miles, having left that ruined wag standing like a slaughtered behemoth at the side of the snow-covered road. The blizzard had faded away behind them, with skies to the south that were like frozen lead. It was still bitingly cold, but the driving wind was gone. The sun shone through a dome of blue, laced with high, fluffy white clouds. The air tasted clean and dry, with none of the acrid toxics caused by the lowering chem clouds in other parts of Deathlands. Suddenly, over the rim of the trail, they'd come across what Ryan had recognized immediately as the Crater Lake they'd been talking about, a bowl of jagged rocks surrounding a massive lake of the bluest water he'd ever seen in his life. Now, gazing with awe at the tranquil scene, they all sat on small boulders that bordered what could once have been a parking lot for domestic wags.
It must have been like this most everywhere before we came trampling all over it in nailed jackboots, despoiling the earth.
I saw pictures in old books back in Harmony. Pictures of what the old ones called paradise. I guess as a young girl I always thought that their paradise must have been something like this.
Rare in the wastes of Deathlands, it was a profusion of natural life, with no visible evidence of any mutations from radiation. Ryan was no expert, but he recognized great stands of hemlock, fir, and pine around the rim of the huge crater. Guessing, he figured the lake must be close to 5 miles across, with a circumference of 30 miles. A couple of islands broke the surface of the lake. One, on the far side, was small and shaped like a ship. The other was closer and larger, with a miniature volcanic cone at its center. Ryan thought for a moment he saw some isolated movement on that island.
Look! Big fire!
Lori pointed away to the west. A distant forest was divided by a great swath of blackened stumps, where a lightning strike had triggered a fire that had raced across half the face of one of the surrounding peaks. It was hard to believe the evidence of their own eyes at the living creatures that moved around them, seemingly oblivious to the presence of humans. Marmots lolled in the clearings, bellies splashed yellow. Their brave indifference to Ryan and his friends was a clear sign that this wasn't an area where man was a hunter.